runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the weekly internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 34 with guest Chris Avis, recorded Thursday, November 8th, 2007. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi there. You're listening to a special live edition of Run As Radio, and I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody.
This time, you're actually with me. You're sitting right beside me for a change. I think it's only the second or third time we've been together.
Yeah, we actually never met face-to-face until show number 2000. No, show number 12 or something like that, I think it was.
Yeah, it was a TechEd US. So here we are at Dev Connections in lovely Las Vegas. I don't think I've actually been outside all week. I've just been here working away, although we got away for a little bit of a dinner. And our guest this week is Chris Avis. Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am what's called an IT pro evangelist for Microsoft. And what my job is to do is really, it's just an evangelical type role. Travel to the country, speak to IT pros about products and technologies that they're interested in, spread the good word about what Microsoft does and has to offer.
And we're talking about the fundamentals of evangelism, which is spreading the good word.
That's right, the good word.
But you're actually aimed at the IT pro rather than, I mean, generally when I think about evangelism, I think about developers.
Correct.
And but you're on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, the other side. And I've actually, we've had a group at Microsoft called Microsoft Across America. And I'm on the TechNet side of that. And there are 13 of us that have been in this role for the last 5 years, trying to raise some awareness on the TechNet side from an evangelism perspective.
So I assume this is not like Hands Across America from the 80s. This is something a little bit different.
No, not quite Hands Across America. So there's only 13 of us versus the millions from the 80s.
So what is it the 13 of you do then?
We are regionalized. So, we have our own segments of the country that we go and speak to IT pros in. We typically go into movie theaters or hotel conference rooms. We invite IT pros from different segments, anything from small one-man shops all the way up to very enterprise level. And we present topics on what we feel are information that we're trying to get out, plus what the IT pros have given us feedback on that they'd like to hear.
So it sounds like you're the guy to go to find out probably a lot of information about pretty much anything that is Microsoft.
If it's IT pro related, we're pretty much the focal point for that for the IT pros. Yeah.
So we have an hour here today at Dev Connections and mm-hmm. or the Connections Conference. And so I think we decided we were going to record two shows.
Yeah, I want to stick with our regular half-hour format, and so if we've got enough time, let's go with two topics I want to do. I like having a single-topic show really focused mm-hmm. on that. And I think the first one we really talked about was Windows Deployment Services, which I don't think we've ever addressed on the show before.
Oh, okay.
So this is a piece of software. Is it sold separately, or do I have to buy it?
No. So just kind of a brief history of the deployment services side of this. Windows Deployment Services will be a part of Windows Server 2008. So when you get the server, it's in all of the different versions.
And I remember the rule now. If it's a server, you have to buy it. If it's a service, that's included with the box.
Yes.
Okay.
That's pretty much covers it. So Windows 2008 will have WDS as a role that can be configured on the server. For Windows 2003, WDS is a add-on. It's a free downloadable tool.
Right.
Comes as a part of the Windows Automated Installation Kit. You can install it to a Windows 2003 server. And both of those replace RIS, which are a part of Windows 2000.
Okay, gotcha. So for the uneducated WDS curious, what is Windows Deployment Service and why should I care about it?
Okay, so Windows Deployment Services is what enables us to perform installations of the operating systems to machines. And the advantage of the new version of WDS is that we do this and support it for both server deployments as well as client deployments on workstations.
So that's new. That's different.
Yeah, that's a little bit different. RIS on 2000, we supported only deploying client machines. We had another product called Advanced Deployment Services that was only available for enterprise servers, and that was designed for doing the server deployments. So we wanted to kind of combine these together to have one interface, one centralized location to do server and workstation deployments.
So what I, Okay, so we have a deployment service. The classic way of deploying workstations and servers, the old school way, if you will, is use like Ghost or something, create images and just make big copies and keep a great big library around and then just stuff it onto a drive and hand it over to the worker. What's the difference? What are the benefits and what do I do with it?
Well, with Windows Deployment Services, we can create a single image using the desktop deployment tools, particularly from the Business Desktop Deployment Workbench.
Okay.
It's, you can also get through the Windows Automated Installation Kit in our desktop deployment site. And you can create essentially two-inch images for the deployment. One would be a boot image, which allows us to load up the basic operating system, establish basic video drivers for display, drivers for reading and storing drive data. Then we call the primary image, and all of this is done over the wire. So we have the capability of just deploying these out as a bare metal install or with some interaction from the end users if we'd like as well.
So make interaction from the end users. So maybe can you give me an idea of what you're talking about there? So the users maybe it doesn't have to be an unattended install. It could also be an attended type of install.
Yeah, it could be either unattended, completely hands-off. So we could actually take a machine that's turned off, and if it supports wake on LAN, we can wake that machine up, push the OS out to it, shut it right back down, and it's all set.
Now, this is the thing I'm trying to get my head around. A bare metal machine, nothing's on the drive. You power it up, it goes missing operating system.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, how do we get over it? And obviously, wake on LAN is one thing, but
yes.
What is the sort of key mechanism of getting from that bare metal machine, powering it up, to go find WDS and start installing an OS?
Okay. So the process is, and let's take the situation where instead of doing a wake on LAN, we're just going to press the power button and turn it on.
Right.
If we have configured in the BIOS to allow either the built-in or an add-on network adapter to boot to the network.
Like a Pixie boot kind of thing?
Needs to support Pixie boot.
Oh, okay.
So it will do a Pixie boot, queries a DHCP server. A part of the configuration of WDS is there's an additional option in DHCP. It's option 060 that allows us to find the WDS server.
Okay.
So we get a DHCP address from the server. We then get the information about where the deployment server is. The client can then contact that server. We pull down typically what would be called the boot.wim file. That loads up the basic configuration to do disk reads, writes, basic video display. And then we call the primary image at that point to load the rest of the file system down.
So I'm the guy who works on the IT service desk, right? And I'm responsible, one of the guys or gals, in my case, guy, responsible for doing, you know, building new machines for new employees or, you know, hardware refreshes or what have you. And I have five different types of laptops that are going out. Maybe I have tablet PCs for the sales guys or the little compact ones. I got the big developer class workstations, but they're all going to run Vista.
Okay.
And some, the same version of Vista, but maybe different configurations, different software pre-installed. How can I take advantage of WDS to help me do that? And make it easier.
Okay.
I mean, I'm thinking I need a different image for every platform for every possible user set, don't I?
No, actually, with Vista, we do not. With XP, Windows 2000, we've been dependent upon the HAL. So you have HP machines, Dell machines, Gateway machines.
Hardware abstraction layer?
Correct, the HAL, the hardware abstraction layer. And each of those would have to have a unique image for deployment. With Vista, we're hardware agnostic. So we can actually have one image that can be deployed out to the Gateway, the Dell, the HP machines. And then we can use an unattend.xml file. It's no longer a .txt file that is created by the Windows System Image Manager to modify the particular installations, maybe for the sales group, executives, remote employees, et cetera, to tweak that initial base image.
So am I installing just an operating system, or am I able to include Office on this, or include other, even maybe non-Microsoft applications included in the, sounds like we're sort of talking about virtual images here. One base install and the ability to configure differently for different audiences, different groups?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the typical imaging process, even with Ghost, is you create a reference machine that has your operating system, you patch it, you hotfix it, you service pack it, you load up all of the different applications that you're going to use in that particular work environment, and then you capture the image of that machine.
Right.
The same process works towards WDS. We can create our reference machine, load up Office, Adobe, Photoshop, any of the applications used in that particular environment, capture that, and then we can also tweak it after the fact using the unattend.xml files as well.
Now, the ability to do this on the server side is really pretty interesting, and I'm assuming that if I'm doing one of the big benefits I know that I've seen, especially in building servers for development environments, large development environments, is doing virtualized stuff on blade centers, for example, and then running multiple virtual machines and giving a lot of flexibility and really agility to being able to bring up and tear down machines, standard configurations.
Exactly.
So what's going on with the server side, and what are the real benefits to the new capabilities in the 2008?
The capabilities are essentially the same between the client and the server, just the ability to create either an image to deploy out in a lab test environment very quickly, very efficiently, and we do support virtualized environments as well.
Okay.
You just create if you're using virtual PC or virtual server, you capture a Pixi boot disk, which can then do a network query to get a DHCP address, find the WDS server, and then install that into a virtualized environment so we can do our lab and testing environment that way.
So this is like an ISO of Pixi that the VM would mount to get its initial boot, and then it goes off, does the usual WDS sequence.
Correct.
And off it goes.
Correct.
How do I select which image is going to be installed? Is that an at-the-machine thing?
We can do it two ways. We can have it interactive or not interactive. So if someone is we can actually predefine the machine. So if they're in a particular OU or a group that we want them in, the machine comes on, it gets installed into that group, is totally hands-off.
How are you recognizing the machine at that bare-bones state? Is it the Mac?
Through the Mac address.
Okay.
Exactly. And if we don't want to do it that way, then we can actually present a menu that gives a list of operating systems that an end user or an administrator typically would select for a particular machine.
Well, see, I'd like to go back to the end user because I see that as valuable. If I have, you know, a test team, for example, that needs to bring is testing a big enterprise banking application, for example. I wouldn't know about that, but so you're bringing up any one of a variety of different machines with different versions of software pre-configured and pre-installed, depending on what version of the enterprise software that you're testing. You know, they may all be on the same version of Windows Server, but they may all have different actual configurations. So it sounds like what you're saying is that, you know, the people that are on the test team can be presented with a menu and say which of the following 60 different, literally combinations of machines do you want to magically put right there?
Absolutely. And I'll have to be honest with you. I don't know if there's a limit to the number of OSs that can be deployed that way or selected through that menu, but I have seen up to 12 different Vista images in some of the test environments I've worked with that just give you that menu. You scroll through with the arrow keys, press enter, and then there you go.
Any limitations on versions of Vista that we can do this with?
No, we can actually deploy out all of the versions of Vista.
Okay.
Probably wouldn't see the home versions deployed out in a business.
I was thinking more in terms of this is an enterprise-only feature.
No, we can do Ultimate, we can do Enterprise, Business, all of those.
But you can do home, it sounds like. I mean, any version?
Yeah, we could actually do home if we want to.
Because, again, going back to the test scenario, it may be that I have, you know, people that are writing Windows applications.
Right. I get that. That makes sense. For a test environment, I need to be able to install anything. In fact, maybe not even Windows operating systems.
You know what? I'd have to check to find out what the support is, but I guess in theory you could deploy non-Windows operating systems as well. Yes.
That's an interesting question. That opens a whole new can of worms.
Now, I am a troublemaker.
Yeah. But before we move on though, that question around home, what makes it unique is that, you know, your Vista home machines, they can't join the domain. So that raises the question of, well, if the WDS server is in a domain and we're deploying this non-domain machine, how does that impact it? The advantage to WDS now is that opposed to RIS, which required Active Directory, WDS does not.
Yeah, it's just a DHCP hook. Everything supports DHCP. You should be able to get to it.
Yes.
It's just really more of a permissions issue.
Yes.
Barely. You're getting basically an unauthenticated connection from some device on your network.
Correct.
And which happens to be a NIC to a PC.
Yeah, so we can do it two different ways. We can have WDS be Active Directory integrated, and it does offer some new capabilities as far as putting machines directly into an OU, et cetera. But it doesn't have to be Active Directory integrated. So that supports and it scales down to the smaller environments that may still be in a work group. They're not using a directory service if they don't want to. Or to support lab environments as well to deploy out for application testing on all different versions of Vista.
It sounds like from what you're saying that licensing controls can be put in place with this as well. I know you have the Active Directory side of things with, you know, the OUs and assign permissions to groups or to machines or
correct.
To individuals. I mean, for example, if I have 120 MSDN licensed people in my development shop,
mm-hmm.
and but I have 300 employees total, for just hypothetically, then I may want to say that those 120 people who are maybe member of like an MSDN security group are able to have free rein access to all of these other images that I put out there.
Sure.
But the others should not be able to. So
correct.
Sounds like from what you're saying is that you're able to support that through the mechanism that's built into WDS.
Yes. We can do that. We also have the capability of within the configuration of WDS, we can either the basic, when you first activate and install it, we don't accept any queries for WDS. You have to turn it on. And then you have options there. You can actually support only valid users where you've pre-populated the information, either in Active Directory or WDS. Or we could actually support any machine. So anybody could walk in, plug into the network, do a pixie boot, get an image. And with that, there's a second option for supporting anything, which is to let the administrator know if it's an unknown machine. The administrator gets a notification. And then until the administrator says yes, that machine stays in kind of a holding pattern, and we don't deploy anything to that. So there's a lot of flexibility built into the system.
So you're actually, I mean, now I'm starting to get the impression this is not just an image of a machine that you're loading onto this, onto the computer. You're going to load a base level OS, and then before you go provisioning various bits of software and so forth, you're going to do this evaluation, decide not to, or you just lock, you everything's there. It's just locked down until you get permission.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Correct. So it's still an image.
It's still an image, but you know, let's say that we have enabled the feature to allow anyone to get the image,
right.
whether a known or unknown machine, and we've checked that option to notify the administrator. Joe Schmuckatelli comes in off the street, plugs in, sees the, you know, does his pixie boot. The administrator gets a notification. If he doesn't know the machine, he doesn't approve it. That machine never gets whatever the corporate images are that are available.
Well, and I know Joe Schmuckatelli, and he does that all the time.
speaking of licensing, what about activation of Vista, activation of Office? Are those things still having to take place, or can you do it in advance? How do we deal with all of the licensing and keys around shipping out all these different OSs and applications?
So you had to go down the licensing
road. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you're deploying software, there's going to be something.
Well, it's very interesting to be a little cynical here that Microsoft really gets the off by default when it comes to installing software you're supposed to pay for.
Yes.
You know, so that's the security side of me coming out.
So I am not a licensing expert by any means. I typically avoid the licensing side of it like the plague. There's a whole bunch of people
and
in
it,
suits.
And it can be confusing, but there are some
absolutely.
New. Absolutely. I assume that this is sort of assuming a volume license application.
Yeah, typically where you'll probably see the most adoption for WDS is in larger scale deployments that are typically volume licensed. And so we would support our KMS servers for automatic activation that way. We could also pre-activate as a part of this process.
And just for, you know, the acronym, not quite so wise, KMS is Key Management Service.
Key Management Service,
right?
Yeah.
So this is, if I'm running a large company, I can have an activation key.
Correct.
Everything's handled internally. I don't have to make the call out to Microsoft's management servers and then get the okay back as sort of a pre-approved. Usually associated says you can use it X number of times.
Yeah, you typically in a volume license, you know, you get one set of media, you get a piece of paper that says you can install X number of machines, and here's your key. That volume license key then runs against all of the different machines. We have a KMS service within the network that can proxy those things out on behalf of the clients or just collect all of the data, pass it to Microsoft, verify the key is still valid, it hasn't been deactivated, and allow the clients to run.
All right. So, I mean, I have to agree. If you're going to the trouble of using WDS and so forth, you're deploying enough seats that if you are paying per seat for licensing, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a different model, as far as I'm concerned.
Again, from a scaling perspective, since it doesn't have to have WDS, it's very good for smaller development type shops that just have to quickly deploy things out from a development perspective.
Where you're doing MSDN licensed software, you know,
you've
bought the MSDN license. So, I mean, as long as you're properly licensed, there's a variety of different ways to use it.
Absolutely. And that's the key, properly licensed.
And, yeah, if you're in a test environment, you're probably creating these instances, running them through a test for a day, and then tearing them down again.
Absolutely.
You shouldn't be activating anything.
Yeah, I do that kind of stuff at home all the time. I don't use WDS at home, but I do a lot of testing at home. I have a machine called Crash and Burn and an image called Crash and Burn that's used just for that. I bring it up, do some testing, you know, mess the whole thing up if necessary, and then I just reinstall that image.
Yeah, I have a machine called Phoenix for that.
All right, and mine's called Kenny, just so we get all the names done.
Oh my God, they killed Kenny.
Yes, it's me. It was me. I did it again.
I like that one. That's very clever.
we mentioned briefly the hardware abstraction layer and the previous dependency on that and the greater flexibility now. We didn't really get into it in great detail. Maybe you can explain why that's been such a problem in the past and what is fundamentally different now.
Well, the reason it's been a problem in the past is that, you know, unless you're fortunate enough to build your network from ground zero and you appropriate all of the money to go out and purchase all the hardware and buy all exact same hardware.
At the same time,
because, you know, different motherboard revisions take place, you know, every couple of months. You know, then what you're looking at is you have a mixed environment. You come into an environment as a new administrator. You have 1,000 seats that you have to maintain. Some are Dell, some are Gateway, some are HP, some are someone else. And each of those requires a different hardware abstraction layer to translate between the OS and the hardware that it needs to run, whether it's a SCSI adapter, video adapter, et cetera.
Different chipsets,
et cetera.
Network cards.
And even if you are fortunate enough to be able to make that mass purchase up front, within 6 months, a motherboard dies, you send it to the manufacturer, they claim it's the exact same thing, but if you look at the motherboard, it will say Rev B, Rev C, and it will be slightly different, and that chipset can actually impact your image. And so now you have to create an additional image. And so over time, you have multiple images you're having to maintain, and it may have the exact same software. The only difference is that the HAL is different on each individual machine. And what we wanted to do with Vista was eliminate that issue, to make Vista so that we don't have to have the different HALs. And in theory, you could have 20 different manufacturers of machines out in your environment and have one image to deploy out to all of those 20 different machines.
Right. The reason I asked to bring it back up is because, I mean, as a guy that's managed, you know, larger scale IT, that's huge from a supportability mm-hmm. standpoint
yes,
and
it
from
is.
A cost of deployment standpoint. Mm-hmm. A lot of time. And I think one of the things that, you know, that we, as I pontificate on we IT folk here, is that we don't do is we really focus on the technology side of things
right.
and we forget about the people side of things and that
exactly.
we have customers. They're not users, they're customers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the pain that has been involved in the past of a hardware changing slightly and an image not supporting it
yes.
and the downtime associated with our customers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, big deal. So
I'm
really glad that something fundamentally different is being done in that area and that Vista supports that capability. I don't know that people in the field really necessarily recognize mm-hmm. the fundamental change and difference there and what that really can mean from
yep.
a supportability standpoint in their IT department.
Yeah, and it's not just Vista. Longhorn, Windows 2008, is going to do the same thing.
Okay, I'm just trying to get my head around believing it. Okay, because, I mean, this is certainly true of, dare I say it, Linux, that I am able to take a drive from one hardware platform mm-hmm. that's running that drive and drop it in a totally different piece of hardware,
yep.
and it will simply come up.
Yes.
So, I mean, I've certainly had that experience with other operating systems. Suddenly I get this, I can't imagine the change it took to have Vista like that. All of a sudden you get a sense of why we've had such a struggle with drivers.
Yes.
That means all of the driver models have to change.
Yes.
We don't have any choice. If we're going to fully abstract away from the hardware, the drivers are completely different.
Correct. So real quickly, there is a caveat to this. I said in theory you could have one image.
Okay.
We still have to maintain 32-bit versus 64-bit images.
Don't even get me started.
So that's still there. But outside of that, I have actually taken the drive out of one laptop. I had gotten a new, so can I mention names?
Absolutely.
All right. So I had a Lenovo T60P. I got a Lenovo T61P. I took the drive out, put it into the new machine, And it came up slowly because it had to redo plug and play for different, you know, there's different items on that new machine.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a lot of thinking involved to make that work.
Yeah, there was. And I actually took that drive and I imaged it before I did that just to back myself up.
No cynicism here at all. You know, one of the coolest things when you do a scratch install of Vista on a bare metal, I mean, normally I get them OEM and so forth, but mm-hmm. if you get a chance to do this, it's watching the device manager when the thing first comes up. There's 20 items not recognized, and it goes out and tries to find all the drivers.
Absolutely.
And you see them just come into play. So I got to imagine you do a swap like that. You plug it into another machine. And granted, that was only a one-digit change for a Lenovo, but it's probably a totally different motherboard, whole bunch of resource allocation differences. And you would see the same thing. You'd plug it in, it would go, oh, all these devices are missing, and all these new devices are here, and let's go get them.
Yep.
And off it goes to try and get everything sorted out.
Yeah, and typically, you know, historically, you do that with any other type of Windows operating system.
And you're screwed.
That machine blue screens, period.
Absolutely.
And with Vista, we don't. We try to load the driver for a piece of hardware that doesn't exist. We say, okay, fine, it doesn't exist. We simply will not load the driver for it. When we come in, looking, like you said, in the device manager, we just start going through the plug-and-play process, and as long as that machine has internet access and we can hit Windows Update, we can find most of those drivers very easily.
And I would point out, you don't just blue screen when you do this to a drive. You ruin the drive.
Yeah.
I mean, in a sense, now you go back to the original hardware, it's broken there too.
It won't work.
It's ruined.
Yeah.
And when you do that and outside of Vista, well, I'm still, that's one of the, I got to try it. I'm in your shoes. I'm going to image a drive. I'm going to move it to another machine and see what happens to it.
Yes. Well, absolutely. Try it.
And I think this is, you know, to play the outsider looking in, this is a good example of where competition from other operating systems,
absolutely,
whether it's open source or other companies or whatever, has driven, you know, you can call it innovation.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it extra work. You can call it catching up. It depends on who you are, I suppose. It doesn't really matter. What it comes right down to is that people are getting better things because someone did it somewhere,
absolutely,
came up with an idea, and it drove a desire and therefore a need.
Yeah, it drove a change in the way things are being done from our corporate level, listening to the customers, seeing what our competitors are doing, and making the right decisions to support, again, our customers, not the users, but the customers that we have.
Absolutely. You know, we're pretty close to running out of time on the topic here.
I'll just throw it out to the crowd. If you guys have any questions around Windows Employment Service, we'll take them now. Otherwise, we're going to change gears. I won't hold it against you. It's fine. Chris, thanks very much for talking to us about Windows Employment Service.
You are
quite welcome.
We're
going to hear back from you real soon.
I think so. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.